I'd like now to welcome Armando Espinosa and Craig Johnson. They are the makers of the documentary La Danza de la Pluma, Fe, Sacrificio y Traición, and they'll be giving a lecture and showing a film tonight at 6 o'clock at Tipton Hall on the campus of the College of Santa Fe. And this is part of the Santa Fe Art Institute series. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
It's great to have you guys here. So this is a documentary, La Danza de la Pluma, The Dance of the Feathers, Fe, Sacrificio y Traición, Faith, Sacrifice, and Tradition. What is the Dance of the Feathers, and where does it take place?
Well, it takes place in Oaxaca, in a few villages in Oaxaca.
So down in southern Mexico.
Yes. This specific documentary is about the Danza de la Pluma in the town of Teotitlán del Valle, which is like 24 kilometers southeast of Oaxaca City. It's only one of two that still keep their traditional religious significance. There is many dance groups that do the danza in Oaxaca, but they're merely folkloric. Towns that had it, that had the dance with religious significance, have changed and they don't have it anymore. They do it as folkloric dances for festivals and you know, social fiestas.
So how did you find these folks?
Well, we've been interested in multicultural dances. And I have known for a long time about Danza de la Pluma, and we wanted to do it. So we went to Oaxaca sort of scouting. We didn't know which places were still performing it as a ritual. And we happened to go to Teotitlán, which is where most Zapotec rugs are made that are sold here in Santa Fe and all over the world.
And so you show some of those in the documentary. Beautiful weaving.
Yeah, because, and then we went there just to see the rugs, and then I started asking about the dance and found out that they do it as a religious ritual. So we looked into the possibility of doing it there, and then we met people and things got facilitated.
So what is the religious nature of the dance that brings it above and beyond folkloric dancing?
The people who are going to do the dance have to make a commitment of 3 years, and one person decides he's going to be Moctezuma, or wants to be, and goes to the municipal authorities. It's an old system of uses and customs, so it's a more of a socialistic, very directly elected municipal government. And if he's accepted, then he has to commit for the 3 years, and he has to get the rest of the troop together. And they really do it to support the town and to pay homage to their patron saint. So once they have a group together, they choose a master of the dance, and they spend about a year getting themselves ready, learning about the dance, learning the steps of the dance. It's actually like 43 dances over a two-day period when they perform the whole thing. And then they're obliged to dance it for 3 years in the major patron saints' day and in other saints' celebrations in the town.
So it's an interesting combination of Catholicism and what, Zapotec religion?
Definitely.
Well, it's Zapotec religion as such is almost non-existent. There is a lot of pre-Hispanic elements to the dance and encoded in the dance from when it first started in 1528. There is the Zapotec cosmovision and Mixtec cosmovision is embedded in it. But the truth is, a lot of the dancers, you know, some of the younger dancers are aware of all this stuff, but a lot of the older dancers, like 50 years ago, were not aware of it. They were doing it just for the Christian significance.
So that's interesting. The younger generation is actually dug under for the roots inside of this dance. What have they found? What are some of the elements of it that really are not Catholic?
Well, you know, this there is many ways of doing the dance. The traditional dance is done with two groups, the Spanish group and the indigenous group, and they fight. It's really a mock battle between Catholicism or Christianity and paganism. These guys in this specific group that we filmed decided to do the dance without the Spanish group. So that to me was already a hint. And a lot of the movie, in a lot of the documentary, we focus on that, on what they saw as pre-Hispanic. And, you know, to take it from what they said, they see that the dance steps, a lot of them represent natural forces or what could be considered deities, the sun, the moon, stars, constellations. A lot of the diagrams that happen in the form of the dance while they're dancing, they make all these diagrams, and they are, you know, religious things that were included there, like the solstices, the equinoxes, are represented in the dance. The main dancer is the sun, and the other dancers are other planets and celestial bodies. And there is a part at the dance that I thought it was great, that they, when the sun is setting in the dance, the Moctezuma, who represents the sun, goes to sleep. So there is this direct correlation with the natural forces of nature.
So how did the people who were dancing these dances figure out this whole aspect of the sun and the moon and the astronomical phenomena and the solstices in what was apparently on the surface a Catholic dance?
Well, I think that was done by the early, you know, when the Spanish first created the dance or tried to transform the indigenous dances into Christian dances, they sort of made the form of the dance and made certain demands of the dancers, but it was up to the dancers that had been dancing this forever to incorporate, you know, to do it.
They kept whatever they wanted to. Mm-hmm.
Right, so they kept it underground. And actually that's what allowed a lot of stuff to survive. And there is like a Christian reading and a native reading of the dance.
And there also have been academic studies done of the dance, so that dating back, you know, several years, at least many years, there were people dancing the dance who did give those that type of information that is written in different journals. And the masters of the dance study the dance, so that, you know, some of the history that was superficially lost, you know, really wasn't lost. It was just picked up again. And the younger people are more interested in that than maybe they were 20, 30, 40 years ago. So that's getting a lot of attention within their own groups.
And it's interesting that you have a place where the young people are getting interested in their dances rather than getting interested in leaving town and going across the border to work or something like that.
Well, they need to work, but...
Well, I mean, there is a loss of young men in towns in Mexico.
And Oaxaca in particular has amongst the highest immigration rate.
And Teotitlan.
And Teotitlan in particular. And actually a couple of these dancers in the current troupe are working either right up in the border or across in the U.S. And as part of their commitment, when there's going to be a dance,
they go home.
They go home, they spend weeks there, and then go back up to go to work.
So what is the nature of the sacrifice? Sacrificio is part of the title of the film. That is between, for example, you know, sacrifice and the healing of illness. Because there are some people in the film who talk about healing really deadly illnesses through dancing. What happens?
Well, the sacrifice, I think, is larger than just for personal gain. The sacrifice involves, as they would say, on several levels. And one of them is the time commitment. Another is their own financial commitment. They have to pay for their own involvement, and the outfits that they use are costly and handmade. They also have to help sponsor.
And they're amazing. I mean, these headdresses that are a size of, you know, a school
meter
child.
In diameter.
Yeah.
And they also have to help to sponsor the actual festivities when they have them, so that they have sacrifices financially, they have sacrifices their time away from their other work, and physically when they're dancing, they really have sacrifices.
Well, they dance 2 days in a row. The first day they dance 5 hours nonstop. The second day they dance 8 hours, and this is for the patron saint. And then they rest 2 days, and they do it all over again. So when they're through dancing those 4 days in a week, they can hardly walk. And besides that, it's the financial sacrifice, where they not only sponsor the fiesta at the church, but they sponsor a fiesta at their house. You know, and fiesta is at the core of religious observances in native communities. The sharing of spirituality and wealth is what it's about.
So as far as dedicating their sacrifice, there's a sort of a general conception that they're doing it for the good of the whole community. As far as making the fiesta more valuable for the community, because the dance is such a big part of it, and the fact that they're paying homage to the patron saint. And then people do take it personally, and as you were mentioning, as far as illnesses and that, they will, in their own mind, and sometimes very, very much spoken, so have a specific reason for themselves that they need healing in some way, for a family member who has trouble and of any particular kind.
And so it's not only for themselves, but for family members or people in the community, or for the harvest, or for the good of the community. Now, you're a doctor. Do these dances work? Do they have their intended effects?
I can't say on any scientific basis. There's people definitely feel that they have, and there are people that have been there and danced years ago, and I wasn't there when they had their real problem, but they don't have it today. The mind and the body work together, and not that illnesses are psychosomatic in that sense, or at least the ones they're dealing with, but the body does have the property, or the ability to cure itself or to heal itself, and when there's that much intention placed in it.
So we're talking to Armando Espinosa and Craig Johnson, makers of the documentary La Danza de la Pluma, which is going to be shown tonight at Tipton Hall at 6 o'clock, and it's part of the Santa Fe Art Institute's series that they're doing of, well, I mean, this film, when you made it, when you decided to make it, you showed up at this town. They didn't presumably really know you, except maybe as two guys who buy rugs. Did they say, sure, we will tell you our secrets and open up our lives? Or, you know, what was the process like?
Well, it's not an easy process. The first thing you have to overcome is the abuse these communities have gone through with time. Lots of, you know, when we do these kind of projects, one of the things we hear the most about is about people that come and photograph or film and promise to bring the results back, and they don't, you know, so you have to overcome that. And sometimes it's easier than others. This time was fairly easy because by chance we made friends with the family, and we helped the family get their submission to the folk art market to Santa Fe, because there was all this political upheaval in Oaxaca that I'm sure people are aware of, because of the teacher strikes. This was back in 2006, and while we were talking to them, they told us they couldn't get the submission to the folk art market because there was no way of sending it because of the political problems. And the deadline was the next day, so Craig asked to use the phone, and he called the market and explained the situation, and they said, we'll extend the deadline for them, you bring their package. And we did, and they got accepted, and then we offered to house them to make it easier for them to come.
So there was a nice mutual...
So then when we decided that we wanted to try to do the... this project in their village, we wrote a proposal to the different committees. This village is ruled by uses and customs, so there is all these committees that are chosen by open vote by the whole town. that take care of the museum. There is the dance committee. There is committees for about everything. So we wrote a proposal for the different committees that would have to be involved, and we asked this family to bring it to them. So they, in a way, vouched for us, you know. But in other cases, in other places, it's not that easy, and you just have to prove yourself.
Now, there is some historical footage and some historical photographs in the documentary. Where did you find it?
One of the younger men in the village is a sort of a self-appointed historian, very interested in the history of the culture and of the town, and has done extensive study. And we discussed a lot of things with him, and he opened up his library to us. And at one point, he showed us this movie, a DVD that the Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México, the National Autonomous University of Mexico, had done in their Filmoteca department. And it was on Oaxaca, and it was around the whole state, but showed historical footage. And it had these two sections that were of the Danza de la Pluma from Teotitlan del Valle, which was just a very nice coincidence. And so
did people recognize their relatives in it?
Oh, definitely. One of the people that we interviewed was the master of the masters of the dance, was in there and did a prominent role at that time in the 50s. So when we got back here, I called down and then emailed through to the Filmoteca de UNAM and explained our project to them, and they gave us permission to use the footage and actually redid from the masters and from their master tapes and gave us.
And in the old photographs, a lot of them are from the collection of the little community museum there in Teotitlan, and some were given to us by some friends here in Santa Fe that collect postcards and have a business, Margulis and Moss, and they gave us and actually we brought back those copies of those old postcards to the town, are now part of the collection of the little community museum.
that's amazing. One of the things that I found so interesting in watching these dances and gigantic headdress, amazing costumes, and then this incredible stamina on the part of the men who were doing it. And is it always men? Are there any women dancing?
Well, there's two girls that dance, the Malinches, or Malinche and Doña Marina, which is really interesting because the Danza de la Pluma gets compared or paired with matachines from New Mexico and from parts of Mexico, and especially with matachines in New Mexico, which are pretty much how they were back then. But here there's two girls, and no, there's no women that participate except for the girls. Although, you know, it's a family commitment, so when the dancers are dancing, the women are preparing food, it's a whole...
labor roles.
No, you know, they don't participate in the dance, but they have their part in the whole process,
right.
And it's also a sacrifice for them. They're also offering it for the benefit of the whole community.
And when they do have the different saints' feast days, there is a separate dance and procession the day before these 2 days, that the women do. And they dress in traditional costumes. They have it's a whole ritual type of thing too. It's not the same promise thing over 3 years,
And also the last dance that the group does, you know, the group finishes its commitment on the day of the Virgin of Guadalupe, the last day of their dance, and that day they dance with their wives. Not the same vigorous dances, but they dance inside the church and they do dance with their wives.
One thing that I was going to say is that's so striking about it is that while you feel that you are, that's a real combination of indigenous and Spanish dancing, the music is utterly European. I mean, a little conductor with his little brass band, and the rhythm, whatever the original rhythms might have been, they're just gone.
No, yeah. You know, in that's one thing they really haven't reconstructed what the music used to be. We can only assume that it was drums and flutes and rattles and, you know, things hanging from the legs. And
yeah, it's so hard to reconstruct.
But also music there, they really grabbed onto European music when it came and really took it. In that town, there are seven bands that are large, from 20 to 30 members each, that play, that learn different songs, and they're composed different songs. Just now in this last year since we filmed the Until July, they composed two more songs for dances for this dance that was just performed now for the main Patron Saints feast in July.
And one thing I have to say, I've been to lots of festivals throughout Latin America where they have marching bands. This is the best I've ever heard.
Do people come from the outside? Is it touristy, or is it pretty much the townspeople?
No, the patron saint in July, it's pretty touristy. Right now, things in Oaxaca are, you know, the political condition doesn't, you know, a lot of people are afraid to go to Oaxaca, although there's no real danger for visitors. But yes, a lot of tourists come, and people come from all the towns around. And share in this festivity.
Now, this is a documentary. It's just over a half an hour. What do you see as the life of it? Are you trying to show it to lots of people in Mexico, throughout Latin America, here?
Well, the truth is that this documentary is only part of this project, and it's an important part, of course, because it was first of all, our motivation was to document it, but we. You know, through documenting many places, many times, we have realized that just documenting and looking at culture as an artifact that you can save for when it's disappeared doesn't really do much for anybody, not for us or not for the communities. So we tried to do this project in a different way, and we, first of all, got the permission to document, but we proposed to them that we would, at the same time, because they do have a little community museum with very important pre-Hispanic pieces and also the weaving history of the town, we proposed that we would get involved with the community in doing a community project of doing a permanent exhibit of the dance in their museum, which we did.
And, with the film, the old film and your new film and so on?
Well, no, but the exhibit we asked, for example, we asked the community to bring old photographs, which they brought over 40 old photographs that I restored and now are up in the wall. They donated, besides the photos that the museum already had, and they donated dance outfits, masks, crowns. I mean, the community really got behind the project, so it was really a community project that we helped. And then the film, it's really, we're only sending it to film festivals. We're not distributing it. We donated the rights of reproduction of the film to the museum to benefit the museum. So in that way, we like to call the project Fair Trade Art and Anthropology.
Well, Armando Espinosa and Craig Johnson are makers of the documentary La Danza de la Pluma, Fe, Sacrificio, and Tradición, and they will be giving a lecture and showing the film tonight at 6 o'clock at Tipton Hall on the campus of the College of Santa Fe, and that's part of the great work of the Santa Fe Art Institute. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want to listen, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Mary Lynn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the colors of jazz. Broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We'll see you tomorrow. Ciao.